Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
This Father's Day at Lowe's, score free gifts for the greatest dad. Right now, get a free select DeWalt, Craftsman, or Kobalt tool with purchase of a select battery kit. Plus, get a free Werner 2-foot aluminum ladder when you buy an 8-foot fiberglass ladder. Shop these deals and more this Father's Day at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 6/15 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning into Truth and Justice. I'm Zach Weaver, and this is your Friday follow-up for Season 14, Episode 28, Susan Simpson Talks Proof. This week, we heard Bob and Janet sit down with the wonderful Susan Simpson for a great conversation about her podcast, Proof. Today, I'm joined by Bob Ruff, but we are sadly without Janet for today's follow-up, as she is on assignment. And by assignment, I mean she's in NYC accepting a Webby for her Braving the Elements podcast. We have a lot of great listener questions, but before we dive into those, let's talk about some non-episode related info.
All right. First and foremost, huge shout out to Janet and her team. I mean, that I feel like Janet didn't even realize what a big deal it was.
I don't think she did either when she told us.
Yeah. I'm like, you, dude, you want a Webby? Like, it's freaking awesome. So, and if you guys, hey, if you're into Avatar, Last Airbender, I always ruin everything she does, but the Braving,
not Shaun of the Dead,
the Braving the Elements podcast, obviously it's fantastic. They just won a Webby, so check that out. And also, don't forget to check out the JV Club. Like, the JV Club is an awesome podcast that I listen to.
It is fun, and Bob and I both have episodes on there.
Yes, very good. So make sure you check that out. And again, congratulations to Janet and the rest of her crew on their Webby. Don't have much housekeeping to do other than just to give you guys an update for you guys to listen on, assuming you listen on Sunday, but just to reiterate, I kind of mentioned it while I was talking to Susan. Very weirdly, last week in the middle of our stream, I got at 8:30 p.m. I got an email from the police department had told me that they had shredded the case file for our new case. Sent me an email that said, through the messaging system said, we found the file. We'll get it scanned and over to you. Now, it's been a week. I haven't seen it yet, but they said they did find it. So
that's good. That's really good news.
Yep. So that's awesome. We've got that coming. We're moving forward with our new researcher writer. Erica is going to be, I just talked to her today. Tomorrow is her last day as a high school student, and we're going to give her a week till she gets through her graduation, and then the week of Memorial Day, she's going to be in here full force. She's itching to go. I told her, let's get through Memorial Day weekend, and she's going to start digging into the case files. We're going to be getting some interviews done. Also, with the person that's in prison, I'm working on, because another thing is I want to record some interviews. It's been a few seasons since we've been able to record interviews mm-hmm. with somebody that's in prison, and I miss that element of what we do. And so I'm in the process. I've been emailing back and forth with them quite a bit, but they, and some like Ed when he was in prison, and Jesse and even Kenny, they were able to, especially Ed, because he was in the camp. Mm-hmm. Like, I could say, call me at exactly noon on Tuesday, and then I could be set up in here with the phone and the everything ready to record. This particular inmate doesn't, you know, they only get 15 minutes on the phone. They never know when it's going to be. It's going to be in a range. impossible to set up to be able to like record an interview with them. But they do video visits. And with the video visits, they do schedule them and they're like 2-hour blocks. So that's what we're moving towards. That also is a process. I had to fill out like a paper application to get on their visitation list. And then once that's approved, then I got to go to another system and apply to be a video visitor. Then I got to schedule a time, but
jumping through all the hoops.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're moving through that process, but we should be able to actually hear from the convicted person in this season. So I'm super excited.
You know what I'm excited about?
What's that?
This season is going to be like old school truth and justice, boots on the ground. It's going
to
be fun.
I know. So Eric and I were talking about that today. I'm blocking out the people that we need to speak to with the, my term for it is the friendlies and the non-friendlies. Mm-hmm. And I've got a nice big block of like the friendlies interviews that we need to do. And we were just talking about, we're going to take it like that first week and take a day and go, hit the streets and start to record a bunch of those interviews, not taking her with me on
the non-friendlies.
Cause I'm pretty sure her dad will kill me if I drag her in any place where it might be any danger, but yeah, she's excited about getting going on the case. I'm just as much as I go through and learn more and more about it, I'm really excited to move forward with that. So season 15's coming soon. I don't know what this week's episode is going to be. I have an idea. I had two people. I've been trying to get Shane Waters on from Foul Play, and every week that I'm like, hey, I got an opening this week, he's traveling. I was talking to Tim and Lance from Missing More Murray, and they're going to come on at some point, but they're kind of on a hiatus right now too. But I thought about somebody we always like hearing from, and you guys can let me know in the live chat if you have an idea of what exactly in regards we could talk to them to, but I was going to reach out to Dr. Shiloh and Dr. Scott. We haven't heard from them for a little while.
That'd be great.
See if they can come on this week. So
have they been on since Janet and I interviewed them?
I don't, Dr. Shiloh has popped on kind of unplanned a time or two here or there, maybe in the follow-ups, but no, I don't know that they have, but they just do. And I feel like there's something on my mind that they had just done recently. So I thought we'd have them on. So it's, and just keep in mind, if you guys are, again, the people that are like frustrated with interviews ready for the season to start, like what really should be happening here is we're just shut down until we start the new season. But I don't like to do that. I like to keep stuff going, keep some kind of content. So just, you have to just think of all these episodes as bonus episodes until we get into the new case, which is coming very soon. And I think I also met with Caden is my student that's going to be doing music for her. Yeah, he was meeting with me today after school and going through kind of the vibe we're going with.
All right. I'll
give you guys another little clue. You know, I told him to, for the vibe of the sound design for season 15, I told him he needs to go listen to the 2001 top 10 hip hop songs of that year and listen to that vibe and that beat. And that's kind of what we're looking for. So that's kind of the sound design that we're looking for. It's 2001. So there's your next clue, an 01 case. But yeah, I'm just excited. I'm just ready to go, but I'm also really excited to like put together like really well-crafted episodes.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this season. It's going to be a fun season.
Me too. So it looks like from the chat, it's a big old yes on Dr. Shiloh and Dr. Scott. So I'll be reaching out to them right now. How can
we
not?
We love the doctor.
Yes, absolutely. With that being said, this episode will be a little different from when we do interviews. There's always a few questions that I don't quite know the answers to. This week, the questions came in, and I was reading through them like, I don't know, 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 because they were very Susan-specific questions. So what I sent the questions that I thought were really needed Susan to answer to Susan. I actually invited her to come on the follow-up, but she had, as she put it, a very rare social engagement today where she gets to get away from the kid. And
good for her.
So she couldn't be on tonight, but she did go through and give answers to these questions. So this is going to be a little bit of me reading her responses to a lot of that stuff. And with that being said, Zach, I think you are in the role of Janet. If you're ready to get rolling.
All right, let's dive into these questions. So the first question comes from Victoria. She says, I live in Stanislaus County, which is right next to San Joaquin County. Susan asked to contact the government in that county about the case. Would that be the district attorney's office?
Yeah, so Susan said if you're in San Joaquin County or Manteca, feel free to reach out to your officials if you're so inclined. those outside of it probably won't be persuasive, though. So she's saying if you don't live, you know, like for us from Michigan, you know, like bombarding them with a bunch of like letters and stuff, that's not going to be effective. But if you live in that area, definitely do that. And she also says, fun fact, Detective Tony Souza now works in your county for the Stanislaus DA's office. So that's interesting.
All right.
Yeah.
Tony says, is the rule that recanted testimony can be replaced by police hearsay about what they actually said before really a thing? And is California the only place with that rule?
Yeah, and I was not familiar with that at all. So I did a little research on it while I was waiting to hear back from Susan. But then she did answer, and she said that it is a thing, and she's seen it in other places too. And that's kind of what I found, that it's like, it's kind of rare, but it can be done. But she says California uses it much more aggressively than other jurisdictions that she's encountered.
That seems really surprising to me. That's a weird thing.
Yeah. So essentially, if I understand it right, it's so if somebody says something to a cop, you know, if they give whatever testimony to you, and I say, I saw Janet commit this crime, and then it comes time for trial, and I say, I was lying, I'm not going to testify to that, that then the cop, instead of you testifying or you know, the jury hearing that you didn't actually say it, the cop can get on and say, Zach or Bob, whatever scenario I just gave, told me that this person committed the crime, which is hearsay, but they're able to replace that because the person recanted. And that's bananas.
Yeah, that seems crazy to me.
Yeah.
Lucy asks, how can we help? Besides this podcast, how can we make a difference? Are there jobs, volunteer organizations, projects that we can get involved with?
Yeah, and there were several listeners that asked similar questions, like what they can do to help. And Susan said to vote for vote for DAs that don't suck. All that other stuff is important too, but show up for your primaries and local elections and vote for DAs that are reform-minded, or at least as reform-minded as it gets for your jurisdiction. And that's huge. And we talk about that. Like, people don't pay much attention to local elections generally at all. Like, I know we'll have here recently, we said there was an election where they had like a couple of bond proposals and things in there. And like in my township that I live in, which is not hugely populated, but it was something like 120 people showed up to vote out of like 7,000 or something like that. Like, they just don't get the voter turnout. So you already have a problem with local elections. But then when it's like this fall will be a presidential election year, so that'll definitely be a lot more people going to the polls. But then people don't spend the time to research the district attorneys, the judges, things like that, that are on the, and for us, for our the people that live in our world, right? The people that are reform-minded, that want to see the criminal justice system get better, we need to take the time to really research those candidates and make informed decisions at the ballot box, not go in and just hit straight ticket. I mean, people are convinced, and listen, anybody that's listened to me for a long time knows that I am wildly independent, that I do not care for either party. So me saying this is not me shitting on the other one or anything like that, or, you know, suggesting that the other one's better. But there are people that think that their party or their ideology is always the best and is always right and is always going to be the greater of the two evils. And it's not necessarily always the case. Like, you need to get in and look, particularly with like judges, or excuse me, with district attorneys, things like that. Like, that very well may not be the case. You may, if you're a lifelong Democrat straight ticket voter, there may be an instance for a district attorney where you need to go through and click that Republican column, because that particular district attorney has a different mindset than and a perfect example of that. And somebody had asked, I don't think I made the cut, but somebody had asked this in the follow-up thread. They were very surprised by such restrictive FOIA laws in California. And I'll use their words. They put it, you know, they're from California, and they said, I'm just shocked that my very liberal state is so restrictive on FOIA. And that's a perfect example of that. Like, I was shocked to hear that too. It's a Democrat controlled state generally, you know, and they have some of the worst laws in regards to some of this stuff. So all I'm saying is, don't be caught up in like blind party loyalty here. Really do your research. And as Susan pointed out, you've got to show up to the primaries, because in a lot of those, like our area, we live in a very agriculture county, ag heavy county, I guess is the word I was looking for. And pretty much always goes Republican. Everything always goes Republican. So for us, the actual election for most local things is the primary. So, you know, all these Republican, we just saw the same thing, Indiana, right? So Indiana has a governor's race and the Republican primary for governor just happened. And there was this whole field of candidates. And then, you know, the one, I don't remember who it was because I don't live in Indiana, but the one person won. That was their election because Indiana is always going red. So whoever's running for the Democrat side in general doesn't matter. It was the primary that mattered. And that's the case in a lot of jurisdictions, especially if you have a jurisdiction that always goes one way, then make sure that you get into those primaries and make well-informed decisions in the ballot box. And again, I just want to clarify, it is not an endorsement of either side or either party from me. I'm very independent. I'm saying for whatever side you fall on, just don't assume because they have that D next to their name or they have that R next to their name, whatever your cup of tea is, that they're going to be the best. That may not be the case. Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. Funny thing about being fast? You end up waiting. A lot. First to show up, first in line, then just waiting. Me, I rev up Chumba Casino. With over 200 social casino games, no slow lanes here. Why sit around when you can spin? I'm already racing. Your turn. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. That's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Caroline asks, did Proof ever figure out what the unidentified scrap of paper was that was found at the crime scene?
Susan said, someone had a great suggestion noting that it was the same color teal as some insulation packaging. She said, we could never find an exact match, but that's the leading guess right now. She said, though, if it is that, the packaging it came from does not show up in the crime scene photos. So if it is, so weirdly, you know, the body was found in a pile of insulation.
Mm-hmm.
They think maybe that was from some insulation, but not that insulation, because it doesn't seem to match anything that's at the crime scene.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Caroline also asks, on the pod, it was mentioned that Jake is a type 1 diabetic. Extreme changes in mood and behavior can be indicative of poorly managed blood sugar levels, which made me think, how did Jake manage his T1 diabetes while living out of a car?
So Susan said he developed type 1 diabetes while in prison. So he didn't have it, which is a weird thing because the type 1 diabetes is the kind that you're born with, and okay. Type 2 generally presents later. But I literally just recently found this out for somebody that I know that just got diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. That it can not present or not be found or managed or whatever until they're older. And that seems to be the case with Jake. She said he developed type 1 diabetes while he was in prison. She said it does happen sometimes. While he was nearly dead before a dedicated prison doctor figured it out.
So this is a good question for our podcast and for Proof. Romel asks, for the latest episode of Proof, Susan and Jacinda talk to a lot of people. One of them might be the actual murderer. How much do they think about their own security?
So I'll give Susan's response and then I'll add to it a little bit. Susan said, not enough probably to be honest, but Kevin is a spoiled sport who makes us account for things like that. Or he tries to anyway. Though we are much more safety conscious now than I was, this is Susan speaking, than she was in her undisclosed days when she used to go out and just knock on doors alone. And that's kind of, I just mentioned this a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. Erica and I going out to do some interviews. It's a tricky situation because a lot of times there's really no other choice. If you need to talk to someone for investigative purposes, then to go talk to them. And I've been in some pretty scary situations. We try to take as many precautions as we can, but yeah, it's something that it should always be on my mind that there are certain situations where it's definitely on my mind where I take precautions, but yeah, it can be a little nerve wracking sometimes, but we try to take precautions to avoid those situations.
Kim asks, what's the biggest hurdle for Jake? Not in terms of a lawyer, but legally.
So Susan says, honestly, his biggest hurdle may be surviving long enough to get through all the legal wrangling. Shit's pretty rough for him, and he's dealing with health issues from the attack. She says, best case scenario, there's an identifiable foreign profile on the necklace, and the DA decides not to fight that. Worst case scenario is we get unlucky and no DNA is picked up. Then he has to go through habeas proceedings likely, and those are very slow. And that's the thing is those habeas proceedings, by slow, we're talking years. Somebody, I don't think I'd put it in here, but somebody had asked, you know, what's the over-under on Susan getting him out of jail 12 months or so? It's really not, as Susan pointed out in their season one case when they, you know, they got him out so fast. Like, that's not at all normal. I mean, an example is, and this is going way, way too slow. But it's an so it was in 2020 when Troy Eldridge recanted his testimony against Jesse Eldridge. It's been 4 years and Jesse's still in prison. And we've been trying to get DNA testing done. There's all this stuff that like and still sitting there. And in this case, luckily with Jesse, there's a CIU involved. But sometimes that's not always that great either because you're kind of at their it's like they take the lead as opposed to having a defense attorney like slamming motions into, you know, to the court and forcing the issue and forcing judges to hear it. When the CIU, the Conviction Integrity Unit, takes over, they're kind of, you know, air quotes on your team now. So you're not hitting them with motions, you know, causing them to go into court and fight. They're supposed to be working to get the, you know, to analyze the conviction to determine if it needs to be overturned. And then you're stuck on their timeline. And that's kind of what's happened with Jesse is we've just been stuck on the CIU's timeline for years now. Look at Adnan's case. I mean, his conviction was overturned in 2016, and he didn't get out of prison until, 2023?
Yeah.
Until he finally got out, you know, after all, and that was, it was overturned, it was upheld, then it was reinstated, and there was a whole new proceeding to get him out. I mean, the wheels of justice turned slow. So the ideal scenario in any of these cases is that you have a district attorney that is not even reform minded, but is truth and justice minded, that is going to look at the evidence and if they join in a motion, things can happen very quickly. So you know, our like Susan said, our best hope in this case is that they do get the killer's DNA off of that necklace, and that you don't have a DA that's fighting. In that case, it could happen, but even that could be, you know, it could be a year for even that to play out. Because first you got to get the DNA tested. Depends if they're going to fight the testing, so on and so forth. There's just a lot of hoops to jump through.
So to piggyback off that, Susan talking about their safety, Chris asks, can anything be changed to prisoner safety, especially regarding this case? Jake suffered traumatic brain injuries and Ty was killed in his cell.
It should be. This has been one of my biggest complaints. And this is one of those things where your eyes get opened when you do this kind of work. You know, you go back 10 years ago, I was of the mindset, people are in prison because they committed a crime, screw them. I don't care. You know, it's supposed to be horrible in there, right? And then you realize the first realization is, oh, not everybody in there is actually guilty. At one point, I remember the Texas Department of Corrections estimated that probably 10% of the people in their prison were not guilty of a crime, that they were innocent, which that's, you know, that's 15,000 people
mm-hmm.
that they're thinking are probably in those prisons aren't guilty. So then And that, just knowing that, changed things in my mind a lot. It shouldn't have taken that. Like reflecting back on it, it shouldn't have taken that. But that triggered a lot of things for me. Was, okay, so you don't care about the conditions in that prison, but there are people in that prison that didn't do anything wrong. So then you start looking at, well, what should we be doing about the conditions in the prison for them? It's the same thing with the death penalty, right? So before I was like, you kill somebody, kill you back. Good, fuck you, right? And then you realize, oh, but what if they didn't actually kill somebody? And then that was, you know, to me, that was a very easy leap to make, to say, okay, well, if there's a chance you have the wrong person, then let's not have a punishment that can't be undone. We just saw it with Ivan Cantu. I've said, I don't know enough about the case, know if he's innocent or guilty. I certainly know there was enough. A lot of people think that he is innocent, so there's got to be something there to it. But there's a question, and they killed him. So if you figure out later that he's innocent, now what?
Yeah, you can't say sorry.
Yeah, you've already killed him. And there's not enough benefit there to, you know, and people will, you know, what about justice for the families? Well, what about justice for the family for the families in the 20 some states that don't have the death penalty? For them, life in prison is justice enough.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it not, you know, and there's all kinds of, and you could, depends on who's doing the study, different things, but there's a lot of studies out there that, like, it doesn't bring the closure they're looking for. It's certainly not the deterrent that people think that it is. Like people that are killing someone, they're not more afraid of the death penalty. It's not like they're like, I'm going to do this because fuck it, I don't care about life in prison. But, oh, wait, there's a death penalty in the state? Oh, then I won't do it. That's not a thing. That doesn't happen. If they're willing to risk life in prison, they're willing to risk the death penalty. They're doing it because they think they can get away with it, or because they're in a state of mind where they're not actually thinking that far ahead. So that's death penalty. I realize that's not your question, but it's the same thought process. As far as the prison conditions, when I first realized that not everybody in there is guilty, that made me start to think about the conditions. And then as I got to know people in the prison, people that I, you know, that I've met through Ed, and I met through Kenny and Jesse, you know, and I get all these letters from prisoners, then you start to realize, well, even if they are, in talking to Damien Eccles about like some of his experiences in prison, you realize that even if some of those people are guilty, even if they're all guilty, they're still human beings.
Absolutely.
Like you can have, like, their rights are taken from them. Their everything is restricted. They're not allowed to make decisions. They eat when they're told to eat. They sleep when they're told to sleep. They shower when they're told to shower. They got to go through a full strip and cavity search to even have a visitation. They have their rights taken away from them. It should still be a safe place, because a large percentage, well, this doesn't matter either, but a large percentage of them, not for nothing, you know, are supposed to be rehabilitating and then going home. Somebody has a 5-year prison sentence, shouldn't have a greater than zero risk of being murdered while they're in the prison. You know, think about all the people that are in there for drug violations. So these are all the things that I'm considering over these years. And ultimately, you just realize whether they're innocent or guilty, whether they committed a crime or not, they're still human beings. The restrictions that come with prison are punishment enough. There should be, everyone should be treated as a human being. Everyone should be safe in prison. And that does need to change. And I'm not seeing those changes occurring. And it's frustrating that people live, that they have to live in. And that's the thing, is prison, for the most part, is intended to be rehabilitation. Other countries rehabilitate prisoners in prison. In the United States, we don't. In the United States, if you go to prison for some drug offense or something, some nonviolent crime, if you didn't go in violent, you're very likely to come out a violent person, because you have to be violent to survive in that environment. And it comes with staff. The problem is, so many prisons in America are for profit. So they're going to put as little staffing as they can, as little cameras as they can. There's places, you know, a real good realization for this is, if you ever watch the show 60 Days In, they take people and plant them inside of these county jails, and they have cameras, and they stay there for 60 days and kind of live. And the concept is that the warden is supposed to be learning from them where drugs are coming in, where the violence is. But you watch that show, and these are county jails. You're like, what the hell? Like, if they want to beat the shit out of somebody, They all know, oh, we just go into this cell. There's never a guard around. We just go into this cell, and then there's no cameras, and we can beat the shit out of them, and nobody can talk, because if they say anything, then we're going to beat the shit out of them. Like, those conditions shouldn't exist. And, like, you watch that show and on a smaller scale, and, like, you know how you could fix that? Put a fucking guard in that room. One guard in that room all the time, where, you know, working in their shifts or whatever, you're rotating people in and out. But if there's a guard there, there's no blind spot from the camera. Long rant about the whole thing, but yeah, our prisons need to be designed for rehabilitation. If people go in there for crimes, they should have the opportunity to better themselves while they're in there. And there are prisoners that are able to, you know, like Robert and Christian, they're in the Delaney Street, I think it's called, program in their prison. They're actually helping people and they're doing things and they've gotten to a safe space. You know, Ed eventually was able to move out to the camp where it was a little safer out there. But I don't know the answer of how we can be able to make those changes, but they need to be made, and our voices need to be heard to try to make something better. Everybody should be able to feel safe at least when they're inside or outside.
Allison asks, is there a known middle initial for Dr. Cooper, and what is his known locations? I have found some other cases he testified in, and I'm interested to see what else I can find. I'd like to be sure that I have the correct person.
So his name is Dr. John Thomas Cooper. John Thomas Cooper. He's worked in California, obviously, and he's also worked in Texas and Arizona for a while, among some other places.
Shannon asks, what is Susan's feelings on whether or not the state will agree to DNA testing like they did in 2016?
So Susan says the current DA is new, though he was a prosecutor in San Joaquin County back when this case happened. I think it's likely, she says, she thinks it's likely he won't fight DNA testing, especially with Renee's family advocating for it. But there's no guarantees in this game. But Susan says she thinks that it will happen. And I think that, I don't know these people, but I think when you have the victims advocating to get the testing done, that's how do you spin that?
Yeah, that's a strong push.
Yeah, especially now it's been in a worldwide hit podcast on top of it. There's so many tens of thousands of eyes on them, and the victim's family themselves are pushing for it.
Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
What if I told you that right now, millions of people are living with a debilitating condition that's so misunderstood, many of them don't even know that they have it? That condition is obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. I'm Dr. Patrick McGrath, the Chief Clinical Officer of NOCD. And in the 25 years I've been treating OCD, I've met so many people who were suffering from the condition in silence, unaware of just what it was. OCD can create overwhelming anxiety and fear around what you value most, make you question your identity, beliefs, and morals, and drive you to perform mentally and physically draining compulsions or rituals. Over my career, I've seen just how devastating OCD can be when it's left untreated. But help is available. That's where NOCD comes in. NOCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for obsessive compulsive disorder. Our licensed therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention therapy, a specialized treatment proven to be incredibly effective for OCD. So visit NOCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call with our team. That's NOCD.com.
McCrispy strips are now at McDonald's. Tender, juicy, and its own sauce. Would you look at that? Well, you can't see it, but trust me, it looks delicious. New McCrispy strips, now at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is not part of the plan, but on that topic, a few people had messaged me and had made social media posts about True Crime Garage. Just did an episode, several episodes on the West Memphis 3. They replayed some old episodes They had Dan Stidham on, who we had on our show as well. And then they did a couple episodes of Conversation. And some people were wondering, they were concerned about the captain specifically, his kind of attitude towards the testing and things like that. I just want to let everybody, for those people that were wondering, and I had said this on social media that, you know, I know Nick and the captain. I know their intention is always to get things right, and they are allowed to have their own opinions. I did actually get on the phone with Captain for about an hour, just because there were some things that he said that were, and they're along these lines, as I'll get to why I'm bringing it up. There were some things that he said about the DNA testing that were misinformed. It was not intentional by his part, but it's the way he understood or the way it had been explained to him. So I want to kind of set the, and we had some conversations on our Facebook page about it too. So I kind of wanted to set the record straight about some of that stuff. So there was, I guess there was some kind of weird, I shouldn't say weird. There was a press release that came out that was George Byers, who was John Mark Byers' brother. And it was put out saying that he was concerned that Jason and Jesse should have been involved, and that by Damien doing this by himself, he's going to get the results and it's going to impact Jason and Jesse's ability if they ever wanted to test later. The whole thing was kind of strange. Somebody in our group that knows Jason and is, a victim advocate, I think they called themselves, for George, verified that he did, you know, that they were quoting him in this thing. It was just weird because it came out. It was like tweeted out by some account I've never heard of with 15 followers.
That's strange.
And also, I don't know George now, but I've sat in George's living room for hours and had coffee with him, talked to him. So it was really, it just caught me out. I was like, why is he, it's interesting that he's talking about all these legal stuff. But anyway, in those regards, I just want to explain a couple things about this. The way this is being done with Damien filing to do this DNA testing, there's conversations. Part of what Captain was saying was that, they should test everything. They shouldn't only test the knots. There's strategic reasons for that. One of them I've mentioned before on the show is, you don't get two bites at the apple, right? So if Damien were to say, I want to test all the evidence, and they list out, I want to test this, and they get denied, they don't get to go back later and say, well, now I want to test the binding. They were already denied testing the binding. So by limiting it to, I only want to test on this round, I just want to test the bindings. If they get denied, they say, okay, well, let's come up with a different strategy and try to test the clothes, things like that. So that's part of it. But also, as far as like what it limits Jason or Jesse from doing, he's asked to do MVEC DNA testing on the insides of the bindings, because our expert told us that's the most likely place to find the killer's DNA, still preserved, still intact. The method, as we've explained, using MVAC, will, when they extract the DNA, it will preserve like 2/3 of the DNA for future testing, future technology. So like if Jason later was like, well, I want to test them using a different method, the DNA is still there. MVAC extraction is not destructive. It is simply a collection technique. So it's not limiting them from doing anything. If Jason wants to test the clothing, he can file to test the clothing. Like all those avenues are still viable. It's also important to point out that there is not a world where if Damien gets approved for this testing and it's done, that Damien gets the results and has the option to hide them from anyone. It does not work like that. The custodian of the evidence is the West Memphis Police Department. If the DA takes custody of those items, and the DA sends them to the lab to be tested, the DA gets the results from that testing. Damien may be copied on it, but those results go back to the district attorney. They go back to the custodian of the evidence. They're not going to give the bindings. They're not going to hand them to Damien and say, go test them and let us know how it turns out. That's not how this works. So there isn't a world where Damien is going to get the results and nobody's ever going to see them. They're going to be sent right back to the prosecutor because they are the custodians of the evidence. They are the government agency that's sending it out for the testing. That's how it's going to be done. There's also discussion about Jason being left out of it. I've talked to Jason a little bit about that in back a couple of years ago, and I know he is kind of frustrated about it. But then there's like this narrative going around that like this is Damien trying to control the situation. That's not what it is at all. I can tell you just from my experience and conversations I had after the documentary aired, and the Ellington finally broke and was like, fine, we'll tell, because remember, originally he said he would test the evidence. Great. Let's file the motion. Let's get it done. Talk to Damien. Let's do it. Talk to Jason. Let's do it. Jason was going to talk to his attorney too. And then essentially what happened was Damien's team's like, let's go. Let's strike while the iron's hot. And we they hadn't got a decision or a response from Jason's team. And they just decided, okay, well, we're going to do, you know, no more than Jason is bound by what Damien does. Is Damien bound by what Jason does? That's all I'm saying with this is Damien's team's strategy was right now we've got him on the ropes. We want to file this right now. I don't know. I don't have contact with Jason's legal team. But they put it this way. That aired in 2020. It's 4 years later. We have not seen a motion from Jason. And that's the other piece of this. Jason and his team, and I'm sure he knows this, I'm not speaking out of turn here and not saying anything negative about it, but Jason and his team throughout this process could have filed any motion they wanted to. They could have gone to, and I'm only saying this because like this is all being like litigated on Twitter, and Twitter's not a real place. The courtroom and motions, that's where real action happens. Jason has had the opportunity at any time to say, hey, I want to join the motion, and he could join the motion. He could file a motion opposing the motion for testing. He could file his own motion to do his own testing. These are all avenues, real life avenues that could be taken. None of that's been done over these 4 years. So, and again, I'm not speaking to Jason. I'm speaking to the people that have these opinions about what's going on. If Jason wants to be involved, he 100% absolutely can be involved for whatever the reason. And again, I don't know. I haven't talked to Jason in a couple of years since I talked to him when we were in Memphis for the hearing. And I've never spoken to his legal team, so I don't know what's going on there. All I know is they haven't taken any action. And so then you wonder, well, if Damien was like, well, let's wait and see until we can both get on the same page, 4 years later, would there even be a motion filed yet? So just keep that in mind. Nothing is restricting Jason's involvement in this at all, or Jesse for that matter, but Jesse's never really surfaced to talk much about it other than when I talked to him when we were doing the documentary. So anyway, I just wanted to lay that out there. There's nothing. If Jason wants to be involved, he absolutely can be involved. And I'm not, again, not speaking to him. He knows this. I'm just kind of speaking to everybody else that has opinions about it. Damien does not get to hide the evidence, or, you know, hide the results of this testing. And the motion was written in a way, part the other piece of the strategy of just asking for the testing of the bindings and just asking for the MVAC extraction is so that if the argument is made, because it has been made by the prosecutor, that, well, this will limit the other two defendants from testing later, it was done in such a way that it will not limit their testing later. So it has nothing to do with any of this. When I saw that, it reminded me of that whole conversation I was having a few days ago. So I wanted to break all that down.
So back to our proof episode. Anna would like to know, how is Jake holding up and if he'd like letters of support? And if so, is there any info on how to correspond with him?
Susan says Jake is hanging in there. He protects himself by always assuming the worst, but it's gotten harder for him not to feel hopeful. He loves getting letters. She said she did not at the time when she sent me this. She did not have his address at the moment, but she is gonna. She said she should be able to get it to me before this episode airs. So if she does, I'll put that in the show notes.
Perfect.
But yeah, he absolutely will love to get letters.
Jeff asks, does Susan think the witness who went to the police and told him who he thought did it, and they didn't notify the defense, was that a Brady violation?
Susan says it is absolutely a Brady violation, no doubt in her mind. That witness also had some important things to say that weren't on the show because they were about people we weren't able to speak to. But it would have been unquestionably material at Jake and Ty's trials. The difficulty, of course, is showing that the source told the police this, since that officer's dead. But I think a fact finder would come. She says she thinks a fact finder would conclude that he did. So that's the thing, is you got to prove two things for Brady. Number one, three things, really. You got to prove it happened. You got to prove that they didn't turn the information over to the defense. and you have to prove that it would be material, meaning that it would have made a difference in the outcome of the trial. It seems like it hits all those prongs. The tricky part, because the officer's dead, is, you know, convincing a jury or convincing a panel of judges that that did actually happen.
Jan has a legal question. Would the due process clause not mean a jury needs to explain based on what they convicted, more than just guilty / not guilty?
No, I'm a non-lawyer, obviously, but my understanding of is, you know, the jurors are the fact finders. So they hear all the evidence, they make a decision. They don't have to justify their decision at all. But you can raise on appeal if you believe that that their conclusion does not support the evidence. We saw that in Sandy Melgar's case. Her first appeal filed after her conviction, the major point of it was that essentially the jury reached the wrong conclusion. So they laid out, like, these are the facts of the case. These are the elements that the prosecution presented. This does not equal guilty. It's an extremely high bar. I'm not aware of any case where it was overturned based on that, but that's how that has to be made. So it's not that the jury has to justify why they came to the conclusion they came to, but it is grounds for an appeal if you can prove through the evidence that their verdict was not based on the evidence.
Jennifer says, will Jake's lawyer, when he gets one, be able to get the case documents from the police and state? Or does California law prevent them from getting them as well?
No, the lawyers can't get them either. That was, we've seen that in Pinyon Pine season 12. And Susan and I did touch on that a little bit, that's in discovery before trial, everything has to be turned over. After they're convicted, and that's kind of what I was talking about earlier, how like California, it's kind of shocking. This is the thing in California. It's not just FOIA. Literally, they don't have to turn anything over to the defense for an appeal. It's bananas. They don't have a right to it either.
Yeah, that doesn't make it. That's super crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Next question is from Whitney. How do they choose their cases for proof? I know much of their investigation is done before the season officially airs, so the case process seems a little different than Truth and Justice.
The production process is different, but the selection process, I think, is very much the same. So the difference between what Susan's doing and what I do is, both of us will have cases pitched to us. People will bring cases to us, and we will do an initial investigation on it. So like for me, I have all my criteria that I go through before it even makes a cut for me to take a closer look at it. And then, you know, for us, we have the team of researchers, volunteers that will then kind of go through and narrow it down to a handful of them. They'll present it to me. I get some case files, I look into it, and if I determine, okay, it looks like there's a good chance there's a wrongful conviction here, then we move forward with it. The difference between us and Susan with proof is, at that point, they move into investigation/production, and they do a lot of that work ahead of time and produce the episodes and then put them out, whereas once I've gotten to that point, then it's like, okay, here goes episode one, and we cover part of the case, and I do my investigation in real time on the podcast. So it's not the selection part, I think, that makes the difference. It's the production piece of it that is different, and how and when we start to really investigate the case, which makes it so, you know, there's always a chance on Truth and Justice that we'll get 20 episodes in and I'll be like, hey, I found this. I think this person's guilty. Where I think that Susan, in her process, would determine that before she ever airs an episode, because she'd already would already be that far.
Our last question is from Pamela, and she has a question about the perks for Patreon and a chance to get to host a follow-up. And she's wanting to know what the criteria is to host a Friday follow-up and if you'll ever do it again.
So if any of those people that are patrons know this, or if you've ever looked at our Patreon, so there's different tiers. The $5 a month tier, so it's $1.25 a week or whatever, that's the one that opens up all of our bonus content. So at the $5 level, you get all the episodes ad-free, you get the pregame show on Wednesdays, you get the behind-the-scenes videos, you get to join interviews live. There's all those perks that come at just the $5 a month level. That's where all of the content stuff happens. After that, the tiers go up, you just get other bonus. So like at the $15 tier, you get all that stuff plus a t-shirt. At the $30 tier, you get all that stuff plus a hat. You get all that stuff plus t-shirt and hat, and you can host a Friday follow-up. It's it's the highest. I think it's $100 a month level. And we do have some of those people, but so far, other than once, I think it was Jennifer hosted one that was at that level. So far, everyone has always declined. They're donating at that level because they want to contribute to the cause. And then, you know, usually we'll reach out to him and be like, do you want to host one of the follow-up episodes? And most of them have always said, no, I just want to donate to help. So yeah, definitely. If somebody's at that level and they want to do it, they'll be on. But that's usually not the case.
And as you can see how poorly I've done today, it's not easy work.
Yeah. And actually we're thinking about after today, we're going to lower the level to $5 to host the, you did great. That's not, this isn't your lane reading the question.
It is not at all.
You did just fine. And with that being said, I do want to answer Susan in the live chat. Asked if Damien is denied, could Jason file the same motion on his behalf? Could that be a strategy? It wouldn't be on Damien's behalf, but Jason could file the motion on his own behalf. So yeah, that's what I mean. Like nothing is restrictive here. And the fact of the matter is, Damien just did Jason and Jesse a huge favor. Like we talked about when we had the Matas on, and then we talked a bit about it with Colin Miller about the precedent that was set. That it's a very small niche of people that would fit into the precedent that was set. Jason Baldwin and Jesse Ms. Kelly are in that small niche. So what just happened was the Arkansas Supreme Court now ruled, and it is legal precedent in the state of Arkansas, that you do not have to be in custody to be entitled to DNA testing, and that an Alford plea does not preclude you from DNA testing. So that is now the law of the land. So now if Damien's denied, and Jason comes and says, well, I want to test the bindings then. And he has a different angle, a different strategy. He can come at it because he wasn't part of this other motion. He can file his own motion now. And it can't be booted based on him not being in custody because that legal precedent is already set. So yeah, there's a lot of options there. But I would say that, you know, like I said, where the rubber meets the road, are motions filed before the court. Anybody can say anything they want to on Twitter. But that's where the rubber meets the road, is when a motion gets filed. And that's what makes the difference. And with all that being said, I think we're going to wrap this thing up. I think we did all right. Sans Janet.
Yeah, Janet a la mode.
Yeah. No.
No, I know.
False. Incorrect. I think I'm going to reach out to Dr. Shiloh and Dr. Scott, see if we can get them on for this week to chat on Sunday. And we'll talk to you guys next week with Janet next week. Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production. All music for the show is created and composed by Shane Yoder at PutThemInASong.com. The font you see on all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com designed, created, manages, and maintains our website, Truth and Justice Pod, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Erica Cantor, Melissa Cardenas, Kaywood Yomnick, and Danielle Rohr. And as always, thank you to all of you for your engagement and your support. If you like the show and you want to support us, you can do that in a number of ways. The number one way for you to support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. If you join our Patreon, not only will you be financially supporting our work, but you'll also get something for your pledge. For just $5 per month, you'll get all episodes ad-free and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups that include an hour-long pre-show chat exclusive to our patrons. Other levels will get you a Truth and Justice Army t-shirt, Truth and Justice hats, and even the opportunity to co-host a Friday follow-up episode. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny, and it goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a case that you'd like us to consider covering, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page, follow us on Instagram, or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. For all of you tweeters out there, you can connect with us on Twitter @TruthJusticePod, To follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth, Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Hey everyone, this is Carrie Champion, the host of Naked Sports.
The all-new 2025 Nissan Armada Pro 4X provides freedom. Freedom to explore, to go wherever you want, with your whole crew and all your toys. With a twin-turbo V6 engine, 8,500 pounds of towing capacity, and seating for eight, this unshakable fortress of a vehicle is built to take you on your next adventure. Drive the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada today. Learn more at nissanusa.com. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Career changers, including veterans and active duty service members. Your transition starts here. Go from GI to IT in a matter of months. Become a certified cyber warrior with training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, offering IT pros great opportunities and a rewarding lifestyle while protecting our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. Deploy your career in IT today. Learn more at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP. SkillBridge and other VA benefits are available to those who qualify.